suspect. That wasn't... And shortly after you stumbled back last night in a fog, the ambassadors from the Mechlins left.
Eleazar rose, knuckles on the tabletop. Ben's father hadn't beaten him in years, yet Ben fought an instinctive recoil.
I needed you here, helping me convince the ambassadors to give our grid the loan that will repair our military from the Grace Loray disaster. The world is changing. It is not enough to sway people's souls with truth. Missionaries are only as successful as the armies behind them. You abandoned your country for your own desires.
I was there for the emissaries of the Emerdian Queen, Ben returned,
and the representatives from Grozda and the Empress's viceroys from Tunke. I was there when they scoffed behind our backs that our grid was broken and unable to hold on to our assets. How would it have been different with the Mechts? Clan wars deplete their own country's assets. I couldn't watch them sneer at us all the same.
Eleazar lifted a hand, silencing him, and Ben flinched. Eleazar didn't react.
I've allowed your lapses, because I hoped you would find the pious god's path and become a beacon of healing to our people on your own,
Eleazar said.
But I was wrong to assume you would not need the same guidance as others to reach a state of purity. I am sorry. I have failed you as your eminence. Fantastic. I suppose I should... Wait, what?
Ben had had this meeting with Eleazar at least a half dozen times. Eleazar reprimanded him, Ben argued, and Eleazar would sentence him to Inquisitor patrols or a month in a monastery. Their people rejoiced as Ben served out his sentences. Their prince making reparations encouraged them to atone for their own sins. Eleazar's apology stopped Ben cold.
Much of your rebellion stems from a lack of responsibility,
Eleazar said.
It is time I pass on to you some of the duty you will one day hold in my place. Despite their barbaric tendencies, the Mechts have agreed to assist us. With that aid, I give you the task of developing a cure for the diseases plaguing Argrid.
Ben's anxiety turned to outright dread.
The diseases? All of them? Yes. Influenza, boils, but particularly shaking sickness.
Shaking sickness, a disease with no known cause or cure, one that pulled people apart from the inside. See, the devout said, evil will rip you apart.
The contingent in Grace Loray is close to finalizing the peace treaty.
Eleazar's voice was guarded.
The Grace Lorayan uprising came because they wanted independence. They have independence now, but still we fear for them. They cling to the devil's ways. We have the chance to approach them with cleansing again in a new way. I want you to develop a healing potion with Grace Loray's botanical magic.
Ben gawked. Memories raced through his mind of his uncle teaching him about Grace Loray's wonders, of him and Paxpin reciting the names of plants that were evil. The rebels on Grace Loray had revolted due to evil magic tainting their minds and souls. So Eleazar said, and so Ben had believed. Until all magic became evil, and Eleazar had overseen the burning of his brother and nephew without hesitation. Then Ben felt the smallest seed of understanding for the Grace Loray rebels, for their freedom, for their staunch connection to magic when his own world became so restrained. Had Eleazar truly just said he wanted Ben to use magic? Was this a dream?
How?
Ben started, his mouth tasting of ash.
Will using their evil cleanse them of that evil? And why me? Why would I be able to do anything?
Eleazar's eyes narrowed.
You question the task that the pious god has outlined for you?
Ben's breath caught. his body tensing as it had during so many lessons after Rodrigo had burned and the Inquisitors had been stripped of any real power.
Everyone must understand the importance of the Pious God's pillars, especially the Pillar of Purity,
Eleazar had told the monks who tutored Ben in his father's stead.
Treat him as any other pupil. Show no restraint. He must learn what is right.
No,
Ben stammered.
I do not question you. I just...
A smile carved through Eleazar's disdain.
As Eminence, you will face many things that teeter between sin and salvation. Questioning your tasks is wise. But know your limits, Benyet.
Ben's heart skittered.
Before the war with Grace Loray escalated,
Eleazar continued,
the Church allowed healing magic. You studied it once, and as my ordained heir, you are protected from its temptations. Use the university to develop a cure for the diseases plaguing our country.
Eleazar came out from behind his desk. Ben stood his ground, thinking over everything he'd done or said, but nothing was worthy of a beating.
If you can cure the pious god's curse with the thing Argrid fears,
Eleazar said,
you will show Grace Loray that the pious god accepts their magic. The world will see that we are capable of adapting. I will ease the transition in the church and government, but you will win our people by alleviating their ills. I admitted that I failed you, and I admit now that, Father,
Ben cut him off. He couldn't hear more. Eleazar had said too many impossible things already. Every year, on the holiday honoring the pious god's pillar of chastity, people made pilgrimages to cemeteries. The day celebrated abstaining from impurities, living without. But it had also become a day to remember those the pious god had removed from the earth. Eleazar and Ben would trek to the royal cemetery, where Ben's mother was entombed alongside dozens of Gallegos in sealed stone coffins. In the stillness of the crypt, Eleazar would choke back tears as he told of how Ben's mother had died in childbirth with Ben's younger sister. How Eleazar's parents had died before that from a plague, and how Eleazar's two older brothers had died as teenagers, passing the burdens of the title name Eleazar to Ben's father, and Rodrigo to Paxben's father.
Ours is a family of tragedy,
Eleazar would say.
The pious god ordained us in blood.
Ben had always believed his family were servants to a higher calling, until he'd watched Rodrigo and Paxben burn. For all his power, Eleazar hadn't saved his brother and nephew. Hadn't, not couldn't. A distinction that Ben had begun to see more and more. The church hadn't given any of the people they burned on Grace Loray a chance. They hadn't explained why magic was suddenly considered the devil's work. They hadn't tried to save the Inquisitors when the public demanded their power be stripped. Ben had been faking prayers since he'd watched his uncle and cousin burn. He sinned, obviously, so those who looked for weakness didn't have to look too hard. He knew exactly where the line was between irredeemable and forgiven. And he'd spent so long living within these boundaries that he'd forgotten how confined he was by the church's dogma. But here his father stood, telling Ben his country needed him to work with magic again. A childlike part of Ben cried out before he could reason through it.
All right,
Ben said.
I'll do it, Father.
By the time Ben got to the university, it was late afternoon. A half dozen defensors accompanied him, including Yakis, who carried the chest from the raider ship, once contraband, now supplies. They left the carriage and horses in the stables outside the university complex. Ben was barely aware of their progress, unable to take his eyes off the chest. The initial high of being commanded to work with magic again had worn off as soon as Ben had left his father's study. Ben had to be drunk or passed out in a tavern, dreaming of things that could not happen. Had Eleazar truly changed his stance on magic? Argrid desperately needed assistance. Looking at the city confirmed that no amount of praying helped. Maybe Eleazar had changed. Maybe the treaty with Grace Loray would bring acceptance. Thinking it felt impossible. Ben trailed two of the defensors through the gates that opened into the university complex, the pale bricks of the perimeter wall worn from centuries of standing. His eyes tore from the chest to latch onto the sign arching over the entrance. Protesters had scratched through it years ago, but Ben could see the words as though they were etched in his skin. Universidad de Rodrigo. Rodrigo, a family name given to the second son of the king, as the name Eleazar was given to the first son. The first son was destined to be the king and head of the church. The second, when there was one, became the keeper of knowledge and the high inquisitor. After Rodrigo's execution, defensors had purged the university of anything associated with magic. All copies of the text he had used, botanical wonders of the Grace Loray colony, his research, his stores of plants. Ben hadn't been here since just after Rodrigo's and Pax Ben's deaths, but the university looked like the rest of Deza now, decrepit. Weeds streamed out along the courtyard's walkways. Trees and shrubs, long in need of trimming, nodded in the wind. The main building, a huge ivory structure with dozens of branching wings, was covered with graffiti of the church symbol in broad strokes.
"Set up a patrol," Ben said as his defensors opened the doors for him.
He stepped inside, his eyes lifting to the ceiling where a glass dome let in hazy light.
"Summon the university's overseer. I'll need to speak with him to find the laboratory and other supplies."
Men broke off to do his bidding, but Ben was already walking toward a door on the left. He remembered the university as well as he remembered every plant Rodrigo had taught him. All the information sat in his mind, locked in a box covered in ashes. But he wouldn't let anyone know he remembered these sinful things so well. Not yet. He heaved his shoulder against the door, knowing he'd find the laboratory behind it. Tall windows lit an oak table littered with empty vials, mortars and pestles, shattered glass and broken clamps, all beneath a film of dust and cobwebs. The delicate bouquet of plants still fragranced the air, earthy and bitter, the smell of long nights and his uncle's laugh, and Paxbin crossing his eyes at him through the warped glass of a beaker. Ben felt as if he'd been in the room as recently as yesterday. Rodrigo had stood in that corner, grinding plants. Paxbin had sat at the table, kicking his legs on the stool. Inquisitors had scurried around the room, making tonics, filing reports.
"They're testing plants," Rodrigo had said.
Paxbin had scrunched his nose in disbelief.
"How do you test something for evil?"
"The tests reveal the effect. If the effect causes harm, it is evil."
Yakis entered the room and dropped the chest onto the table. Ben jumped. None of the other defensors had followed Yakis in, leaving them encased in sunlight, surrounded by ruin. Eleazar had planned the delegation to Grace Loray a year in advance. How long had he been planning Ben's assignment? He knew how much Ben had loved his uncle and cousin, so Eleazar had to know how much this magic meant to Ben. Did he want to free Ben from living a lie and bring acceptance to Argrid and reignite peace with Grace Loray?
"Have you heard anything?"
Ben asked Yakis.
"Have any of the defensors... have there been rumors of magic? Are others meant to report my actions?"
Eleazar had briefed Ben's defensors on the delicate nature of this project before they'd left for the university. But Ben had long ago accepted that members of his personal guard would always be more loyal to the king than to him. Yakis gave Ben a sympathetic smile.
"I hadn't heard anything until today." "Would you have, though?"
Ben nodded toward the rest of the university.
"My whole guard knows we're involved. If something is afoot, they'd keep us both ignorant."
Yakis frowned.
"What do you think is happening?"
Ben shrugged, feigning nonchalance.
"I'm afraid, I suppose.
He flicked a broken piece of glass across the table.
All who dabble in magic end up beyond reach, as you said. The king and the pious god ordained this task. The devil's touch will not corrupt you.
Ben laughed, dry and sad.
You put too much faith in me, Yakus.
And I don't know how much further I would fall without you.
Ben gasped. He wanted to pour out the unworthiness that gnawed at him whenever they went to services, and he watched Yakus sing hymns, his eyes closed in reverence. That was what had first drawn Ben to him. Yakus embodied the devotion Ben hadn't felt in years.
Yakus took Ben's arm, his face alive with piety.
You know I came to Deeza after my family died. My parents of influenza, my sister and her children of shaking sickness. But I really left because I couldn't...
Yakus stopped.
My parents and sister believed in this country, in making it better. So I left to serve Argrid. The pious god has me in your service as he has you in his service, because we are the best tools for his tasks.
Ben parted his lips. He wanted to tell Yakus the truth, that a cure that could have saved his family wasn't in a blessing from an absent god. It was in that chest. Ben had watched Rodrigo perform a test in this room, using botanical magic to cure a patient of influenza within a day. Prayer might work, but magic was always effective. Except against shaking sickness. For now. Ben said other impossible words instead.
The Mechtelans.
Yakus squinted.
If there were no responsibilities, no pious god, no higher calling, we'd go to the Mechtelans,
Ben said.
It would be cold and barren, and a raving warrior would probably kill us, but we'd build a hut. You could teach me how to fish. We'd never have to deal with...
Ben waved at the university around them, at Argrid, at the church and his father. Yakus pulled the sun from the window to his smile.
Give a guy a chance, would you? Apologies, Defensor. I'll try to be more repulsive. That's all I'm asking.
Ben faced the chest. He opened it, hoping it would make him feel steadier. Vials of botanical magic stared up at him, each nestled in a snug velvet compartment. Awasia, helica, aerated blossom. Then, a brown flower. He struggled. Cleanse root? One of the most powerful plants, capable of healing both internal and external wounds.
Defensors and protesters destroyed most of the university's resources after my uncle's heresy,
Ben said.
We'll have to find someone to assist us. Someone to...
Take the blame, Ben wanted to say. Even with Yakus believing that this mission was right, Ben wouldn't admit that he could name the plants in this chest, and was already piecing together how he could use the helica and the cleanse root. No matter how his new responsibility tempted him, Ben was playing a dangerous game with people who would cry heretic at the slightest provocation.
We need someone who understands magic,
Ben said. But the ones who knew anything were priests and defensors who only used their magic to condemn people. A moment of silence in which Ben heard Yakus humming softly to himself. He didn't recognize the hymn, but that was unsurprising. Yakus knew far more than Ben. Finally, Yakus said,
The raiders. Maybe one could help us as a way to cleanse his soul.
Ben nodded, the idea gaining traction. He knew which raider to ask, too. The one who had already proven himself familiar with magic. The Mecht warrior.
6. The council meeting devolved into arguments fueled by Milo and the Argridian diplomats, who offered occasional suggestions that bordered on insults. The room was on the edge of combustion. Should they please the Raider head or the Argridians, or deal with Devereaux in some other way?
Should they act on Milo's proposed bill to eradicate the Stream Raiders, or take another stance with Devereaux's sentence? The decision would be definitive. Too definitive. If the Council killed Devereaux Bell, it would mean war with the Raiders. Head Pilkvist would take it as proof that the Council wouldn't negotiate, and the Argridian contingent would push for the Council to act on Milo's bill to eliminate Raiders. If the Council gave Devereaux to Ingvar Pilkvist, tensions with Argrid would spike, and the peace treaty would dissolve. The Argridians would be outraged that the Council had complied with the demands of criminals. Devereaux's fate would anger either the Raiders or the Argridians. Neither threat was preferable. In the row ahead of Lou, a council member called out in favor of Devereaux's death, thereby endorsing the bill to eradicate Stream Raiders. Lou blanched, leaning closer to her father.
"Either we kill Bell and strike a match on the fuse of civil war," Lou whispered to Tom. "Or Ingvar Pilkvist kills Bell and the Argridian Treaty likely disintegrates."
Tom's lips puckered.
"Much is riding on one boy. Apparently Bell was caught in the market assaulting a lady. A foolish mistake for someone with his reputation to make, especially at such a time as this."
Lou's cheeks heated, but her embarrassment was alleviated by her father's implication.
"You think this might have been planned?"
"We don't have enough information to make assumptions."
Tom's gaze turned to the door through which the soldiers had dragged an unconscious Devereaux Bell.
"If only there were someone with a proven talent for getting information out of people. Someone Devereaux Bell might not be expecting."
Tom looked at her again, a spark in his eyes. He was being coy, and she wanted to respond in kind, to joke about how capable she had been during the war. But a hole opened in her stomach, and she looked to the front of the room, to Milo in a heated debate with Kari again.
"I'm not that person anymore," Lou whispered. "I don't have to be."
Tom took her hand and drew her focus back.
"No, darling. You would not be going after him as a spy or a soldier. You would be only questioning him, and as a politician."
Lou weighed that. As a politician. Not as someone who would go with weapons tucked into her stockings or escape routes planned. She smiled, soft and true, and squeezed Tom's hand. That was all she needed to excuse herself from the meeting. Everyone was so distracted that she simply walked down the aisle. All senior council members held apartments in the castle, where they stayed during particularly long sessions. So Lou stopped at her family's apartment to gather supplies before she slipped down to the castle's dungeon. The two soldiers on duty snapped to attention as Lou entered the alcove that linked the wings of the dungeon. A ring of keys jostled at one's hip, the only keys that opened the four doors branching off this bare room. One of the soldiers stepped forward to intercept her. She tugged at her satchel. "I've brought some supplies for Mr. Bell. He may be more likely to cooperate if we show him a few courtesies." The soldier's eyes brightened.
"Ah, come to gawk at the notorious raider?"
The other soldier smirked.
"I bet Bell's got lovers in every port. Careful, miss. Criminals only lead to heartbreak."
The first one muttered,
"And diseases."
The other soldier snorted and covered it by coughing. She had anticipated this. Lou adjusted her satchel over the dress she had changed into. The scarlet gown crested over narrow panniers that gave the skirt a fashionable drape from her hips, complete with a bodice stitched in a golden vine motif and bell sleeves accented by ruffles. Feigning lovesickness had been the second excuse she had planned. With a delicate sigh, she patted her cheeks.
"Oh, no, an innocent visit, truly."
The soldiers shared another chuckle. One shrugged, unhooking the keys from his belt.
He's restrained well enough. No danger in a short visit." "Maybe danger's what she wants,"
the first soldier winked at her. They unlocked one of the iron doors that led from the alcove. A hall appeared before Lou, the stone floor slick from the moisture of humidity. iron bars designating each cell. Two other soldiers stood outside a cell on the left. When the door squealed, they glanced over. The soldier who opened the door grinned at them.
Bell's got a visitor.
He looked at Lou.
Been a quiet few days as far as serious crime, so you've got no other prisoners to worry about.
Lou started down the hall, her silence stoking more chuckles as the door closed. The guards outside Devereaux's cell stepped out of earshot, yet were still close enough to intervene if needed. Bell was in one of the cells with a window, and the evening cast moonlight through. Tapers in the hall lit all else. He was conscious now, spread out on the bench beneath the window, one leg crossed over the other, his foot bouncing. His eye was closed, his arm bent to cradle his head. Lou stepped closer to the bars.
Mr. Bell, she said.
Vex heard the door to his wing open and assumed it was someone come to interrogate him. So he stayed reclined, kicking his foot in the air. But the voice that said his name was infinitely more interesting. Vex grinned and rolled his head to face the hall. A few cuts from Pilkfist's beating burned at the movement, but his grin stayed when he saw the girl outside his cell. She wore a fancy red dress that pulled out the golden tones in her brown skin and made her hair glossier in the light from the wall sconces.
Now this is a surprise.
He flailed his legs into the air and spun off the bench, but his gut reminded him that he'd recently been punched in the stomach. As he wheezed, the girl said,
You were given nothing for your injuries.
Vex looked up.
Have you come to tend my wounds?
She moved something over her shoulder, a satchel, the one he'd tried to steal from, and pulled out a jar of ointment. Vex's eye widened.
Seriously? But if you insist I disrobe, I must ask the same of you.
The girl held the jar to her stomach. I have matters to discuss with you, Mr. Bell. He wrinkled his nose.
Just Vex.
Vex. Truly? He grinned again.
Deeply.
She stood close enough that if he was against the bars, they'd be nearly chest to chest. He took a step forward, not realizing until then that she might not appreciate being so close to the man who'd scared her half to death in the market. Would she have come down here if that were true? This would tell him how much he'd hurt her, if he needed to make amends. He sauntered over and rested his elbows on one of the horizontal bars, a dare in his eye. The girl lifted a thin black eyebrow but didn't move away. She wasn't much shorter than he was, and the angle allowed for a certain vantage point that Nayeli liked to use during cons. It was why she spent so much money on the really nice silk stays. They lifted and pushed certain things higher and tighter and... Vex swallowed, fighting a shudder, but it came anyway, and he swallowed again.
What could you want to ask me, Miss...
He waited. Andrew.
Andrew? As in the daughter of Kari the Wave?
The girl was unruffled. The daughter of a senior council member, yes? Vex grinned.
I figured you weren't the typical riffraff who shop from Raiders, but I never would have guessed you were the daughter of someone important. I know how to pick my marks.
The muscles in the girl's jaw bulged. She glanced at the guards, but they didn't have much interest in their conversation. A matter you would be wise to keep to yourself, lest you wish to bring the council's wrath upon you. The girl whispered. A coil of black hair brushed her collarbone. She had a bit of Tunkian in her, which gave her skin that golden hue, but maybe a little Argridian, too. It is only due to my compassion that you aren't dead already, she said.
Ah, so I'm indebted to you?
In a way.
His smile flared. What do you want in exchange for your assistance, Miss Andrew?
I picked up many things from your display in the courtroom, chief among them your disregard for the severity of your circumstances. She waited, eyebrows raised, and Vex rolled his eye.
Of all the things we could be doing. Fine, m'lady.
Vex shoved back and swept his arm in a dramatic bow.
Shockingly, you're not the first person to accuse me of wanting to be here, and I'd bet what's left of my reputation that you won't be the last.
What's left of your reputation?
I've become the most notorious unaligned raider in Grace Luray.
He pressed back against the bars.
What possible reason do you think I'd have to ruin that? While I'm flattered your people think I'm a criminal mastermind, I'm here against my will. Tua Alteza.
Your Highness, spoken in the fancy language of Argrid's upper class, to see if she reacted to it with the same haughtiness Argridian bullies showed. Though he'd dealt only with men, that didn't mean his blackmailers wouldn't send a girl to get something out of him. Actually, they should have sent pretty girls to sway him from the start. But she didn't flinch. You were caught, alone, in the market. You didn't try to run. Vex groaned.
Do you have any idea how many times I've repeated this story since I got put in here, Princessa?
The girl cringed.
As with most aspects of raider life,
he began the lie he'd sculpted.
Things got dangerous and I got separated from my crew. Stopped in the market to gather enough supplies to find them, saw a certain young lady who shall remain nameless, and figured she'd have a few dozen Gaias on her. And,
he rubbed his bruised nose with a smirk,
she surprised me. It was stupid, but it was an accident, Princessa.
The girl pursed her lips. She definitely didn't like that title. You have to see the curiosity in this. She tapped the jar on the iron. Your reputation is that you have avoided capture because you know Grace Luray better than anyone. Surely you would not lose your own crew. Vex grimaced. If her mother was a senior council member, maybe she wasn't an Argridian agent. But had the council sent her there?
Is this why you came here?
He asked, letting his irritation show.
The council thinks I'll spill my secrets to a pair of pretty eyes and tightly pulled stays?
The girl smiled as if he'd given away something important. I already know your secrets.
Do you now?
He echoed her smile, making his slyer. The girl leaned in. She smelled like... Lance? He inhaled again, thrown by the scent. Yeah, he knew dried botanical magic when he smelled it. The girl spoke. I think the Argridians told you to get yourself captured so your presence would create dissension in the council and help Milo Ibarra's proposition pass. Whatever is planned, Mr. Bell, I'm here to tell you that I will not let it progress further than this. He blinked, thrown again, this time by her certainty. She cared about this island in the same way Etta cared about keeping their crew safe, like it was a sacred task she'd been born to. The girl was right, though, sort of. Should he tell her?
I am actually getting blackmailed by Argridians to sell them magic, which I did, but I didn't do this. I mean, Argrid didn't ask me to get arrested, but I did do it because of them. No, wait. Yeah, better to lie. You think I'm working with Argrid?
Vex laughed.
Please. I'd forgotten our beloved mother country had paid us a visit until I was shackled in your courtroom.
Then perhaps it was not an elaborate scheme. Perhaps all you wanted was to create unrest in the government that would lead to easier targets and bigger payouts.
Which would be difficult to capitalize on if I was imprisoned. Or dead.
Ah, therein lies the true purpose of my visit. The girl lifted the jar to the neckline of her bodice. Vex's eye dropped to it and he cursed himself, but he was already looking at her cleavage, and the girl was watching him look at her cleavage, and... Damn it, she'd intended all this, hadn't she? I'm prepared to make you a trade, the girl said. This jar's contents for an answer. Vex tipped his head.
I thought I was already indebted to you.
That debt will remain. This is separate.
Huh. Go on.
The Helica's ability to soothe skin ailments should heal your wounds in less than a day. The girl pressed her palms on either side of the jar. Do we have an agreement?
It was odd for a politician's daughter to know anything about magic beyond how sailors gathered it from the riverbeds and sold it. The upper class relied on apothecaries and merchants to tell them what to take and how to take it.
You're willing to trust me? Vex pressed. Even if I'm as awful as you think I am?
Is that a yes? He bobbed his head, his gaze not breaking from hers. There are three possible outcomes to your current situation, the girl started. The two that will lead to strife involve your death. Either the council kills you and angers Head Pilkvist, or Head Pilkvist kills you and Argrid is angered. The only way you will survive is via the third option. So whatever plan you or Argrid had to bring unrest to Grace Luray will not come to fruition. Vex frowned.
What would Argrid get out of his death?
What had she said earlier? Some kind of proposition from one of the diplomats?
That couldn't be good.
The third option, the girl continued, will be unpopular but may pass more easily if you cooperate. Will you either pay the hundreds of Gaia's in fines you owe, or work off your debt under our supervision? Vex's smile stiffened. She was seeing if he'd taken out instead of choosing to stay here and keep stirring up trouble, to prove whether or not he was here with a nefarious plan. He'd never intended to stir up trouble. He'd wanted only to make it too difficult for his Argridian pursuers to reach him until he figured out some brilliant way to get rid of them. But it'd be nice if the council didn't kill him first.
How would I work for you? He asked. Bleed taxes out of the impoverished?
The girl drew back. No one bleeds taxes out of Grace Luray's.
Yeah. It's for the good of the country. We operate for the people. Point is, you want me to work for the corrupt system I've built a reputation working against.
The girl's mouth bobbed open as if she couldn't see anything wrong with what he'd said, save for the one word he knew she'd latch onto. She held steady, didn't so much as tremble. Grace Luray is not corrupt. But yes. He bowed his head.
Fine, if that's the price of freedom.
He reached for the balm, but the girl kept her fingers around it, surprised by his answer. He stopped, his hand close to her bodice's neckline. The brand on his wrist was shiny in the light from the sconces, Argrid's crest tangled with the rough R.
If that's all, Princessa.
He closed his fingers over her fist, brushing the lace along her neckline. A lightning bolt shot to his gut.
This is mine?
The girl's lungs hitched, and she released the jar. Vex's grin widened. He unscrewed the lid. The jar held some sort of ivory paste. There are no princesses here, the girl said, regaining herself. I am a politician. Vex frowned at her, one finger bent toward the ointment. While it may be in your nature to lie, Raider, she leaned closer, it is in my nature to control the truth. I never said the contents of the jar were healing balm. Vex shook his head.
What?
She'd said that a balm would heal him, not that that balm was actually in the jar. He yanked his finger back.
What's in the jar?
Maybe healing balm. Maybe poisonous oils from digestive leaves, she curtsied. Lovely speaking with you.
Damn it. She had played him. The tight stays, her body against the bars of his cell, every goddamn word from her had been some careful game meant to shake him up.
The girl got a few steps away before she glanced back at Vex. He tipped the jar against his forehead in a salute.
Fair play, Princessa.
She spun around before he could read anything else on her. The door to the soldier's alcove opened, and she was gone. 7. Ben's carriage stopped at the base of the Grace Neus steps. He didn't get out right away, his fingers digging into the velvet-covered seat. Grace Neus Cathedral was the heart of Deeza. Its stained glass windows were riots of scarlet, lavender, and orange. Over the front doors stood statues representing the five pillars of the pious god: purity, honesty, chastity, penance, and charity. Beneath them, wallowing in the devil's fiery hell, were depictions of debauchery, overindulging, whoring, and other impurities. High atop it, as on every cathedral, sat the symbol of the church carved out of white stone, the curved V, cupped hands beseeching the heavens. For all its beauty, the cathedral was also the site of Deza's holding cells. Beneath the sanctuary where choirs sang and congregations gathered were those struggling to purify their souls. Church servants branded the successful and released them. The unsuccessful, well. People packed the cathedral's yard, some singing hymns and swaying with their wrists pressed together, hands cupped in the church's symbol. Others cried, "Nos purificar!" Purify us. The only place that wasn't clogged with onlookers was the circle at the south end, so seasoned by the burned bodies of those who had refused to repent that Ben wondered if it would ever be anything but a black stain on the ground. The door to his carriage opened. Yakus's watchfulness turned to concern as he leaned in. "Have you changed your mind?" Ben didn't respond. Yakus pulled the door at an angle, blocking them from the crowd as he put his hand on Ben's thigh. "We don't have to do this." Yakus's sympathy brought Ben back to his duty here. Not to watch the daily burning that the crowd had gathered for, not to stew in memories. He'd come to gain access to the raiders who had been detained, particularly the Mecht. Ben wrapped his fingers around Yakus's, squeezed, and jumped out of the carriage. A line of defensors stood between the crowd and Grace News, a half-circle of navy tunics and feathered hats. Beyond them, nobles clustered across the marble steps. Claudio, his arm linked through Salvador's, and a few other aristocrats from that morning's Inquisitor patrol. They watched him, hopeful and judgmental and a dozen other conflicting, exhausting things. Someone broke off from a group of priests, causing everyone on the steps to turn like banners following a breeze.
"Benyat!"
Eleazar declared. His white and scarlet eminence robes brushed the stones.
"I expected you to be at the university."
"I've come on that business. If I may speak to you..."
A cheer drew the crowd's focus. Ben clenched his fists and turned, holding his breath. Across the long yard, defensors led out the condemned in wrist manacles.
"Nos purificar!"
people cried as soldiers tugged sacks over the heads of the doomed. Then,
"Burn the barbarian!"
Ben squinted at one of the prisoners, huge, blonde, and unmistakably mecked. The man's head vanished under a canvas sack.
"The raiders,"
Ben spun to Eleazar.
"They can't be burned already."
Eleazar's face was heavy from years of yanking too many souls from the brink of destruction.
"The raiders you arrested are guilty of too many crimes. The pious god demands we commit their souls and bodies to hell."
Ben remembered the Mecht attacking him, the fire parting his lips, smoke on his breath.
"Father."
Ben stepped closer.
"Everyone deserves a chance to choose the pious god. Give them that. The Mecht was defending his captain. You would have done the same."
"Do not compare the Eminence King to these vile sinners,"
a priest shouted. His voice cut like a dull knife would through flesh and grabbed all attention. The nobles, groups throughout the crowd looking up at their leaders with wide, curious eyes. Ben could pull Eleazar aside, ask for a private audience. But hymns continued as soldiers tied the condemned to stakes. They'd shoot the Mecht. The eye of the sun kept him from burning, but they could purify his soul in other ways.
"Father,"
Ben tried before the deaths could be carried out.
"I need the Mecht warrior my patrol captured. He has knowledge of magic that..."
Ben's own words died in his mouth before Eleazar shot him a stunned look. The crown, prince, had asked to pardon a prisoner because of magic. Ben's body broke out in a cold sweat. He was reminded yet again of why Argrid had never had need of a large military force before the Grace Loray War. Because all it took was one word, one whisper of unforgivable sin, to subdue the entire population. The priests around them gaped, their hands going to positions of prayer that might as well have been raised fists. Nobles started to whisper, magic, a word none of them wanted to be caught with, but everyone wanted to say. Eleazar straightened, and Ben swore he felt the crack of knuckles on his jaw already, the blood spilling over his tongue.
Benyat is correct, Eleazar said, loud. Ours is a god of mercy.
He leaned to whisper to a nearby priest, who lifted trembling hands.
By order of Crown Prince Benyat, they shall be spared, the priest announced.
The whole yard went silent.
Heretic, was all Ben could think. Heretic, heretic.
Days after Rodriguez and Pax Ben's deaths, Ben had wept to go to Grace Loray. He'd heard stories of crowds there overpowering priests and saving the condemned, of guerrilla-style fighters descending on prisoner transports, of the entire country rising up against the church. Why did Argrid want to murder people? Why did Ben's country take comfort in atrocities padded with words like ordained and righteous? He'd asked those questions of his Monksy teachers and of Eleazar. All he'd gotten in response were bruises and, eventually, a broken jaw. Ben's pulse throbbed in his neck, his chin aching where the bone had snapped under his father's hand all those years ago. Eyes from the crowd and nobles bored into him, as hot as fire. Murmured words of shock and horror clumped at his feet, as deadly as dry kindling.
Nos purificar,
the people began again, and other prayers they seemed to send not to the pious god, but to Eleazar, standing on the steps unmoving.
I gave you this task,
Eleazar said, for only Ben to hear.
You know its delicate nature. It has been less than a day, and you are already causing unrest. Was I wrong to trust you?
Ben shivered and bowed. His fear crested and broke upon him.
Can Prince Benyat be forgiven for this?
He already heard people whispering. The pious god was clear about magic now. There was only one end, death. Which was why Eleazar had ordered him to make a healing potion, to banish beliefs that stifled their country, to end the extremism and violence. Ben looked at his father. Was that what Eleazar wanted? Was it possible for him to have changed from someone who had condemned his brother and nephew and beaten his own son to someone who wanted tolerance? Defensors led a new group of prisoners out. The first 9 were gone, sent back to the holding cells. The crowd's hysteria rose again, glad that someone would die, proof that evil would be expunged. A few eyes stayed on Ben, though, full of hatred and fear. Eleazar had his hands to his chest, his lips moving in a prayer Ben caught only pieces of.
Give these souls to prove our penitence. We pay for impurities in blood.
Eleazar would do anything to serve the pious god. Sacrifice anything. Either the job Eleazar had given Ben was what he promised it to be, an improvement to their country. Or Eleazar was trying to make the sacrifice Ben had felt looming over him for the past 6 years. The royalty gave hope to Argrid while they were alive. But Ben had seen the impact of dead royals. Rodrigu and Pax Ben had burned and brought desperation for safety at any cost, and unchecked power for the church. What could a dead prince bring? Ben retreated, stumbling into Yakis. There was a breath of space between them, so when Yakis asked,
Are you all right?
Only Ben heard. Yakis took Ben's elbow regardless and pulled him down the steps. At the far end of the yard, flames fed on dry wood, racing to gobble up the tarnished souls before they could taint this country any longer. A noise filled the air, a scream that could never be unheard. Priests said it was the sound of evil being driven out. In a fog, Ben wound up back in his suite in the palace. The soft glow of the fireplace's flames was meant to make his rooms welcoming, but it only stung his eyes. He marched past it, stopping to drop his hands to the top of his desk and let out a howl. A hand clamped his shoulder. The door to his suite was shut. He and Yakis were alone in the firelight and the curtained darkness of the sitting room. A better prince would have ordered Yakis away long ago. A better defensor would have apologized for crossing the line between noble and servant.
"You're supposed to make them question, to change their minds," Yakis tried.
"Am I?"
Ben looked at him.
"It feels like heresy."
Yakis smiled. Ben spun even more.
"Heresy or hope?"
The firelight behind Yakis shone between the strands of his hair. The room pitched, the paintings on the walls and the dark cherrywood furniture throbbing with each flicker of flame. Yakis was humming, that hymn, and Ben still couldn't place it.
"What is that?"
Ben whispered.
"That hymn you sing when you're nervous."
Yakis smiled.
"I'm not nervous."
His face went rigid.
"And it isn't a hymn. My sister used to write songs. It was one of hers."
Ben pulled back, his brow pinching.
"You never told me that.
You never asked."
He didn't say it accusingly, but Ben's heart still bucked with shame.
"Why do you love me?"
Ben asked.
"I'm selfish. I'm distracted half the time. The pious god demands chastity until marriage. I'm bad for you in every way possible."
Yakis's face softened.
"My sister used to say you could tell a person's character by what they considered their weaknesses rather than their strengths."
His smile was brittle.
"You're my weakness."
The firelight heaved, and Ben grabbed Yakis to steady himself. That touch was all he needed. Ben followed the sway of the flames to nestle in the fold of Yakis's neck. If working with magic sentenced him to burn, he hoped this smell, the one that clung to Yakis's neck right here, ginger-spiced soap and bitter salt in the sweat on his skin, filled his final moments. He tangled his hands in the folds of Yakis's shirt, getting drunk off the sweetest wine. 8. Lou did not get a chance to speak to either of her parents until the next morning. The council had been in session when she left Vex's cell, and Tom was one of the council members at the front of the room, shouting and arguing, making it impossible for her to inform him of what Vex had told her. When Kari and Tom at long last returned to their apartment, bleary and exhausted, Lou was slumped across her desk, half asleep working on the tonic for Annalisa. But finally, the new day dawned. Sunlight streamed through each window Lou passed as she made her way to the castle's dining room. Alongside the warmth of the soft white light, Lou felt something familiar and it made her steps heavier. The war against Argrid had begun when she was too small to remember. Every time Lou had gone to pick up information on the street or in rooms where one tiny girl went overlooked, she had felt she would burst with the certainty that this would be it. This piece of information, which as a child she had not truly understood, numbers of troops or the location of a battle, would end the war. Later, when Tom sent her out on bloodier missions, everything she did was because of the certainty that she would make things better. She felt that same certainty now. Vex was willing to cooperate, which likely meant he was not involved in a larger plot with Milo, which further meant there might not have been a plot at all. Lou may have been a fool to believe a raider, but his response had seemed sincere. A just as familiar feeling of dread rose when Lu eased open the dining room's door. Not once had her certainty as a child resulted in the war's end. The dining room overlooked the lake, giving a miraculous view that Lu had once believed showed the whole of Grace Luray. Glass panes along the outer wall opened to let in waves of fresh lake air and sun-kissed billows of humidity. The table down the center held dozens of seats, and servants kept a smaller table off to the side, fresh with fruit and pastries, as visitors staggered in throughout the morning. General council members and a few of the Argridian contingent were present. Milo was not. Lu's parents sat at the main table. She took a chair across from Kari, Tom next to her, and let their presence serve as a reprieve. Tom smiled at her over a cup of steaming awasia, one of the most popular of the commonly used plants. It caused alertness and kept the taker awake for extended periods of time when dissolved in water. The earthy scent painted the air as he offered her his plate of food.
"We didn't wake you when we left this morning, did we? You seemed as exhausted as if you'd been testing that sleeping tonic on yourself. You haven't, have you?"
Lu yawned in response and took a saltfish fritter.
"Of course not, Father. When does the council reconvene?"
"Don't worry about that," Kari said. "You'll return to the hospital? Tell Teo if he doesn't stay with us tonight, I'll drag him here myself. A hospital is no place for a healthy child."
Lu managed a smile. "I will see if the promise of sleeping under the same roof as Devereaux Bell will tempt him, but I doubt even that will pull him away from his sister." She paused. "Speaking of, was a decision reached regarding Mr. Bell's fate?"
"Hardly,"
Tom sighed.
"The Argridians refused to move forward with our treaty unless we agree to hang Bell, a move most of the council was none too pleased with."
"I spoke to him," Lu said, picking the crispy breading off the saltfish fritter. Oil glistened on her fingers. Kari's eyes were on the door behind Lu.
"Who, sweetheart?"
Lu looked at Tom. He hadn't told Kari about her meeting with Devereaux? Raised voices broke through their conversation, drawing the attention of all in the dining room to the door. Lu spun as Brandon Axel, captain of the castle guard, shoved his way ahead of the fuming Argridians. Kari was on her feet immediately. Laszlo was the only other senior present, and he joined her as she moved around the table to intercept Brandon.
"Captain?"
Brandon extended a closed fist to Kari and peeled back his fingers. Lu shot up from her chair, her eyes falling on the handkerchief that fluttered open across Brandon's palm. Inside, a ribbon looped plants in a bundle, their color indicating that someone had dried and steeped them. Kari shook her head.
"What is this? What's happening?"
"An outrage!"
an Argridian behind Brandon shouted.
"It's beyond condemnable!"
Kari ignored him.
"Captain, what?"
But it was Lu who said, "Drooping fern?" Brandon looked at her.
"That's what it is? How do you know?"
Lu's face heated at the accusation in his tone. How would a politician's daughter recognize a dangerous plant on sight? But he might have been only anxious for the angry delegates behind him.
"I've studied botanical wonders," she explained,
not mentioning that she had drooping fern in her room at that moment. But she hadn't steeped her supply. The plant was effective only when burned and the smoke inhaled.
"Drooping fern? One of your despicable plants?"
the Argridian spat. He looked liable to punch something. His hands in fists, everything tense.
"Not only is he gone, he was poisoned."
A wave of silence fell over the room. Lu went immobile as her mother asked,
"Who is gone?"
"General Milo Ibarra,"
Brandon answered. A beat and the room exploded, questions overlapping in a tangle of anger. Lu balked.
"Milo is gone?"
Kari raised her hands for silence that didn't come as Brandon offered more details.
"The general hasn't been seen for hours. The teapot on his table was upended, revealing the drooping fern. In his tea."
Those details did nothing to soothe the room. In fact, the anger and questions grew. Why Milo? Who would do such a thing? And loudly, over and over, how dare Grace Loray allow this to happen? Luz got cramped. She pulled at Brandon's arm to see the drooping fern again, and she got one good look before her mother spoke.